Last time we saw that Lot's path of decline began with a lack of positive zeal for God and to obey His word. And we thought that of how he had just tagged along behind Abraham and he went with the flow or whatever current was prevailing. But his departure from God becomes more definitely sinful as time passes by. His departure becomes more real and more evident and visible as he continues in the pathway of decline. We noticed how he had separated from Abraham and going his own way, moving toward the plains of the Valley of Jordan, then focusing even more closely upon the cities of the plain, moving in one direction, and then finally we find him moving toward one city out of all those cities, the city of Sodom. And then by the time we get to chapter 14 and the verse 12, we find the words that we want to make as a text this morning, that Lot dwelt in Sodom. Here we have another element of Lot's spiritual decline. He not only moves away from Abraham, from the company of faith and the people of God, moving away obviously also by that move from the presence and the blessing of God, but now we find him coming down into the company of the ungodly. And the first thing that I want us to consider this morning as we think of this stage of spiritual decline is that his departure from God and his backsliding brought him into fellowship with evil men. We are told in chapter 14 in the verse 12 that Lot has come a long way. He has not only now moved towards Sodom, but he is now actually dwelling in Sodom. Lot has by this time, obviously, abandoned entirely his pilgrim lifestyle. If you look back to chapter 13, you will see in the verse 12 that Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. So the reference there in that verse is to the fact that he is dwelling among the cities of the plain, but he's still in a tent. He's still in a tent. He's still a tent dweller. He's still a pilgrim. He's still one who is moving on, moving through. That, of course, is symbolized in the fact that those Old Testament believers, it's a point that is made concerning Abram, that he was a dweller in tents. That fact is specifically referred to in Hebrews chapter 11 as being an evidence of their faith. In Hebrews 11 and the verse 9, we read of Abraham that by faith he sojourned in the land of promise. He was a stranger in the land of promise, for that's what the word sojourn means. He was a stranger in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles, dwelling in tents, with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. It was an evidence of the faith of Abraham, of Isaac and of Jacob, that they dwelt in tents. They made a statement by that fact. For he looked for a city, verse 10, which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He had his eye not on an earthly city. This is in Hebrews chapter 11, in the verse 10. He looks for a city, not an earthly city, but a heavenly city, an eternal city. And in verse 13, the statement is made, these pilgrims, died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. That was the path that Abraham was walking. He was living by faith, looking for a heavenly city, journeying towards that city, and the external sign of his faith was that he dwelt in tents. He lived in a tent. But now you have Lot, and his eye is off the heavenly city, and his eye is now on an earthly city. And it is not very long until we discover that he has abandoned his tent. He has, if you like, abandoned the visible, the external evidences that he is a pilgrim. Now there are things that mark out the child of God as a pilgrim. There are those visible evidences that are to be about our life, that we are strangers here, that we do not belong here, that we have no part of what is all around us in the world. Our eye is not upon temporal and earthly things only, but our eye is upon that heavenly city. That is the mark of the pilgrim. That is what God has called us to do, to pass through to that heavenly city. We are strangers here, but it is Lot's experience here, as he continues this path of backsliding and spiritual decline, that the external evidences that he was a stranger upon the earth begin to disappear. The external marks that set him apart as one who lived and walked by faith, obeying the call of God, soon begin to disappear. Now I want us to make the application of this. We're not talking about having to live in a tent, but we are speaking about those visible evidences that ought to mark the people of God out as different. The evidences that separate them from the world. The evidences that give testimony to all and declare, as those Old Testament pilgrims, they confess that we are strangers and pilgrims upon the earth. Those marks of holiness, those marks of obedience to God, those marks of the servant of Christ, they're visible. They're as visible in the modern Christian as the tent was in Lot's day. The tent stood in contrast to the city. The city dweller was under no illusion that the fellow who was living in the tent outside the city wasn't going to be there for long. He was going to be moving on. He was a stranger. He was passing through. And it is to be just so obvious today about us, that we are living by faith, we are not of this world, that we are strangers here, and that we are pressing on toward the heavenly city, even the city of God. But Lot's life soon begins to lose these evidences. Here's the lesson. If there is not about us the external, visible evidences that we are walking by faith and obedience to God, then we are in spiritual decline. And allow me to suggest to you that that spiritual decline has advanced greatly. It is an advanced state of spiritual decline in Lot's life when we find him leaving the tent behind and moving into Sodom. It's almost right at the bottom of the pit that he has fallen into. It's almost at the bottom of that decline that he has walked down. If there is not about our lives that open evidence that states to all who look upon us, I do not belong here. I belong to another kingdom. I'm just a stranger in this place. I'm not of the world, even though I'm in the world. If that evidence is not there to all who see us, we are in spiritual decline. We are in a backslidden state, as Lot was. Now, Lot did not intend initially to entirely abandon his pilgrim lifestyle. If you look at chapter 19 in the verse 9, a later incident that occurs, but there's a statement made by the men of Sodom that is a striking one. And they say to Lot, "This one fellow came in to sojourn." That, I think, indicates to us Lot's original intention. He comforted himself even as he moved into Sodom that he was still going to be a stranger there. He was still going to just sojourn in the city. And literally, as I've said, that's what the word sojourn means. This verb gives us the Hebrew noun stranger. He was going to be a stranger in the city. And that's what he comforted himself with. Even as he packed up his tent and put it away and he moved into the city and he settled down, he comforted himself with the thought, "I can still be a stranger here. I can still be a witness for God. I can still be a pilgrim in this city, in Sodom. Though I've abandoned all the external evidences of pilgrim lifestyle, I can still be a pilgrim here." You know, there are many of God's people, and they foolishly comfort themselves in that with that very same logic and that very same thought. And so they continue to go to a church that is compromised. They continue to live in the world, and they continue to indulge the flesh in sin, and they can say, "I can still be a witness. I can still be a pilgrim. And Lot's mentality is the mentality of so many of professing Christians today, that they want to live as close to the world as possible and yet try to maintain pilgrim status. It can't be done. In order to be in Sodom, Lot had to put away his tent. And no matter what his comforting thoughts were, no matter what his intentions were, he was now no longer a pilgrim. He was now externally living no longer like a pilgrim. He came to sojourn, it would appear. Do you know how long he stayed there? There are two significant dates that are given to us in these chapters in Genesis. The first three dates. The first, Abraham entered Canaan when he was 75. The second, when he was 10 years in the land, Ishmael was born. And third, when he was around 100, Sodom was destroyed. Now, by the time that Abraham had been 10 years in the land, in chapter 16 and the verse 3, Lot has already gone. He's already separated. So the very least period of time that Lot was in Sodom was 15 years. I tend to believe that it was more than that, perhaps closer to 20. But there's a 10-year period at the beginning of Abram's stay in Sodom, or in Canaan rather, and at some point during those 10 years, Lot moved out. And he was at least 15 years in Sodom. Perhaps closer to 20. He intended only to be there for a little while, but it turned into, perhaps, let's take the figure, 20 years. 20 years in a backslidden state. I have heard of Christians using the foolish and sinful logic that there's something in the world that appeals to them, and they know that they must sin in order to do it, but they're going to do it, and sure, I'll come back to the Lord next week again. Just make a short, quick detour. It never works like that. It never works like that. We could look at the historic example in Ruth chapter 1 of Naomi and Elimelech and their family going because of famine to the land of Moab. They should never have made that move. But the same language is used there. They went to sojourn. They went just for a little while. They went and they were going to try and be strangers there. But the verse 4 tells us they were there for 10 years. And Naomi's experience mirrors Lot's experience in a wonderful fashion, because it was an experience of loss and ruin and misery. The fact is this, the more that we settle into the world, the less we are what God has called us to be. The more like the world we become, the more of those visible evidences of God's people that we pack up and put away like Lot's tent, the less we are like God, and the less we are what He has required us to be. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and the verse 11, there is an exhortation given there by the apostle. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. The stranger and the pilgrim is the one that wars against sin. It is the stranger and the pilgrim that is engaged in the battle with the world, the flesh, and the devil. And that's what God has called us to be and to do. But the Christian who abandons the pilgrim life and begins to settle down in the world, they stop fighting. They stop resisting sin. And rather they are overcome by sin. And they begin to sink down into the wicked morass of the world that Lot sunk into in Sodom. You see, Lot's decline not only caused him to settle down and to stop going forward as a pilgrim, but he settled down among the wicked. Now that's a point that is not to be missed, because that is the inevitable terminus of spiritual decline. That is where backsliding leads to, not just abandoning a pilgrim life and settling down, but he settled down among the wicked. And in fact, he settled down among the worst of sinners. He settled down among the vilest of society. You know, that's the way it was for Peter. You remember on that notable occasion of Peter's backsliding that climaxed in his denying the Lord? Look at what's recorded in John chapter 18. See Peter's path of decline. In John 18 and the verse 15, we read that he is following afar off. John, who he is with, goes into the palace of the high priest with Jesus. That's a striking thing. John is with Jesus. And again, we have two men. Just like Abram and Lot, there are two men here. both believers. One goes with Jesus and the other stays outside. Peter stood at the door, verse 16, without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. There's the first denial. And the servants and officers stood there. Who were they? They were the very men who had just now returned from Gethsemane after arresting the Savior. That's who the officers were. And they stood there, and they had made a fire, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them. You see, it's just the very same thing. It's the very same principle at work. There's a separation takes place. Peter stays outside, and now he settles down into the company of those who hate Christ, who had come, and if they had been able, they would have murdered him in the garden. I believe that was the plan of the devil. That was their murderous intent. And it was only the providence of God that restrained them. But Peter is now standing among those who indulged murderous hatred of Christ. And that's where he is. See how comfortable he is. He's standing at the fire and he's warming himself with them. He's in their company. He soon begins to talk like them and act like them. Because that's where decline leads to. That's where the indulgence of worldly, fleshly thinking that Lot indulged leads to. Continued departure from God and his people only leads to closeness to the devil's crowd. There's no other way. There's no neutral territory. It's either you're like the Lord and with Christ, or you're like the devil and with him. There's no middle ground. And the farther we get from the Lord, then the closer we get to the devil's crowd. That is the path of decline. There's no other way it leads. It led Lot from the company of Abraham, that giant of the faith. It led him from the presence of God and the company of God's people into the company of the vilest of men that lived on the face of God's earth. And I think that we have grounds for saying that there have never been viler men since. This was the worst society. This caused the very God of heaven to open the windows of his wrath and to destroy the cities. And that's where Lot came to. Lot was a Christian. I think we need to keep reminding ourselves. The Spirit of God tells us there in 1 Peter that Lot was a just man. He was a believer. But the evidences here are absolutely lacking. It encourages us at times to think of this. While it is a sad and a tragic thing, it reminds us that there even are the people of the Lord out there that we may overlook and dismiss as saying, no, they never were saved at all, those people. They're living like the devil. God has his people. He knows them. But if it wasn't for Peter telling us, almost at the end of the New Testament, we'd never have entertained the idea that Lot was truly saved. But this is what happens. When we begin to depart from God, this is where it can lead to. This is where it can take us, down into the vilest of society. What is the Lord's description of the company that Lot engaged with? Chapter 13 in the verse 13, the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. There's God's verdict on the company that Lot is now found in. Here's a child of God in the company of evil men. They're wicked before God exceedingly. Now the extent of Lot's assimilation into Sodom's society can be gauged from the words of these portions. For instance, in chapter 14, we can look at the events of chapter 14 and see that Lot was captured with the men of Sodom and Gomorrah. And Chedorlaomer saw nothing in Lot to distinguish him from those rebels that were found in the city. Lot was just one of the rest of them, as far as Chedorlaomer, as an impartial observer, was concerned. He'd never met Lot in his life before. He didn't know anything about his history. But looking on Lot, he was just one of the other rebels. And so he takes him along with him. And Lot goes into captivity with the men of Sodom and Gomorrah. Why? Because he looks like them. He was among them. And as far as the observers and that other army were concerned, Lot was one of them. Now that to me indicates, at least in some measure, how far Lot had integrated himself into that society. He had settled down so much as to look like them and to be part of them in the eyes of external observers. But then, as some years roll by, we come to chapter 19, the next reference to Lot in the city of Sodom. And we read the remarkable statement in Genesis 19 and the verse 7, where Lot is addressing the men of Sodom. And remember that these are men who in the context are bent upon pursuing their brutish and vile immoral desires toward the two angels that had come into the city. And he says unto them in the verse 7, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Look at how he describes them. He calls these vile, evil, unnatural beasts of men, brethren. He calls them his brothers. He refers to them in family terms. Now, is that not a strange thing? Is it not an indication for us just how far Lot has integrated himself with that society? That he can look on these vile brutes and call them brothers. But you know, the truth of the matter is that Lot did have family relations with these men. Because Lot's daughters had married men in Sodom. In chapter 19 and the verse 14, it's obvious that an unspecified number of Lot's daughters had married, and he had sons-in-law in that place. He had family relations in Sodom. He had men who, in a sense, were his brethren, because he was related to them through the marriage relationships of his daughter with those men, or of his daughters with those men. Now, here is how far Lot has integrated himself into that society. Here is how far his decline has gone. How wicked it is to see such a thing. Now, contact with the ungodly is unavoidable. We live in the world while we are not of it. Even as a pilgrim, we must have some kind of contact with the ungodly. In business and in ordinary day-to-day activities, we have contact with those who are the ungodly. Paul refers to this in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and the verse 9, where he refers to a former letter to this church. And he says this, 1 Corinthians 5 and the verse 9, I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolaters, for then must ye needs go out of the world. Now he clarifies his remarks. He's saying, I told you, you don't keep company with these kind of lawbreakers. You don't fellowship with them. And then he steps back and he says, now, I'm not talking about the ordinary contact in life, because we can't help but meet people who commit these crimes day and daily in our ordinary relations with the members of society all around us. He says, if we're going to cut ourselves off from such sinners, then we need to go out of the world, because the world's filled with them, and as we pursue our course through the world, it's inevitable that we come into contact with such. But he makes the distinction between this ordinary level of contact and fellowship. He makes the distinction here as he's writing to these believers. You can't help but have contact with these people in the world, but you don't have fellowship with them in the church. You don't sit down with them and call them your brethren. You don't indulge those relations with the ungodly that are prohibited in the word of the Lord. Our contact with them is to be minimized, and it is to be limited to certain areas of life. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul takes up the same theme. In 2 Corinthians 6 and the verse 14, and he says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. That yoke, whether it's in business or in life or in worship, there is not to be those formalizing of relations with the ungodly. 2 Corinthians 6:14 makes that plain. What fellowship, look at the word he uses, what communion, what concord, what agreement. These are the words he uses in verses 14, 15, and 16. There is no common ground between Christ and the devil, and there ought therefore to be no common ground between the people of Christ and the people of the devil. Now, whether it's liked or appreciated today or not, God has called his people to a separated life. That is part of what it means to be a pilgrim. That is part of what it means to be progressing toward the heavenly city. A life of visible difference. A life of separation. A life of holiness and a life of godliness. Now, that's one of the reasons why I'm opposed to ecumenical endeavor. Because ecumenical activity is doing what Lot did in Sodom. It's calling brethren those that are not the brethren of the people of God at all. Lot, in actual fact, was lying. He was not speaking the truth. He was deceived to call those evil men brethren. And so you have in the ecumenical movement, there are people of God, I have no doubt. If Lot was a believer and he was stuck in Sodom, I have no doubt that there, in the modernist church and in the ecumenical movement of this age, there are those caught up in that are truly the Lord's people. But what are they doing? They're living like Lot, and they're calling brethren and sisters those that are not in the family of God at all. And in fact, in this age of decline and apostasy, they're doing exactly what Lot did, for they're calling Sodomites their brethren. And that's happening in churches all across the world, where God's people are sitting down in family relations with those that God hates and has cursed and are an abomination in His sight. God has called us to live a life of separation. We don't have time to turn to Ephesians chapter 5, but you read the chapter. See that we are to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Reprove them. But Lot's decline causes him to live in disobedience to these principles. Lot's decline causes him to live in defiance of what God has said. You live a separated life. And let it be clear about this morning, and I speak to us all. The moment we begin to set aside the tent, the visible evidences that we are a pilgrim, that is a mark of decline. That is a mark and an evidence that decline is already far advanced. For there may even have been a period of many months and even several years in this phase of Lot's decline. It's advanced well by the time he has packed up the tent. And he begins to fit in. I was reading the other day an article about the Pacific octopus and how it can blend perfectly with its environment and with its background. And just reading the testimony of a man expert in the field, and he has all kinds of qualifications in studying these things. And he says there have been occasions when I knew there was an octopus there. I knew I'd seen it go there, but I couldn't see it. It had so perfectly blended in with its background. You know, there are many Christians, and that's how they live. They have the ability to blend in, but it's wrong. It's disobedience. It's backsliding. It's decline. We are to stand out. But let us remember, as we conclude our study this morning, let those words burn into our mind that we've been thinking of in chapter 14 and the verse 12. He dwelt in Sodom. There is a simple statement of the depths of decline that Lot came to. And if there is, within our own life and within our own heart today, that desire to blend in and to fit in, like that old octopus, recognize what those thoughts are. They are sinful thoughts. They are the thoughts of the flesh. They are definitely not thoughts of obedience to God. He has called us to shine as lights in the world, in the midst of a crooked and perverse and darkened nation and generation. And there's nothing that stands out more in the darkness than the light. And yet so many of God's people, and it is the tendency of the old flesh within us all, to hide our light under a bushel, to try and shine, but not let the light be seen, to try and be a pilgrim, yet live in Sodom. But you can't do it. May God help us to obey Him, and to stand separated unto the gospel, as a pilgrim, openly as those old pilgrims of faith referred to in Hebrews 11 did. They confessed. They denied not. They were strangers and pilgrims in the earth. The old song says, "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through." But many sing those words. They don't live like them. May God help us to live them for Jesus' sake.